Welcome to Nairobi. Nairobi is my city. I lived here for 10 years before going off to New York, so I think I can glad. And welcome to United States International University, because I'm also a member of council of this university. So in many ways, I have the kind of privilege and opportunity to welcome you here. I want to start by thanking colleagues, staff, the staff, leadership, and fellows of the Social Science Research Council, the Next Generation Social Sciences Program, for giving me the opportunity to contribute to your event. I agonized a little bit when you were coming. I saw the program, and I said, what kind of engagement could I have with you? Oh, methods, protocols, epistemology, all of that. And I said, you're going to have a basket full of that. So why don't I do something different? And what I am trying to do is, because your program is very important, is about next generation social scientists on this continent. So I said to myself, what exactly can I say that will be different from what you might have heard over the past 3-4 days? So I said to myself, since your program is very important, and you have the task as social scientists, both the social sciences and the humanities, have the task, particularly as Africans, of explaining us and interpreting us to ourselves and to others, not only so that we can understand our world, but also so that we can change it. I know some of you might say already there are lots of people who explain us, who interpret us, our interpreters, particularly the TV pundits. You know, Fred Zachariah, it's a great, on CNN, he's a great explainer and interpreter. But the difference between us as social scientists and the pundits and the theologians and the politicians, all who try to frame our worldview for us, the difference is that we come from a background of evidence. We come from a background of evidence backed by rigor, backed by a set of protocols, backed by a kind of quality assurance that is based on peer review. And we link ourselves to, as peers, with a group of other people. We could be intergenerational, we could be intragenerational, but we carry out the duty of explanation, of interpretation, at times of describing, but we have to go beyond descriptions of our social, political, and economic reality. And in that sense, we carry a burden on us. So, in a very special way, this program is actually building people that I will say from the perspective, and I'm not religious in that sense, but I used to say something that is very Grecian, you know, from the Greek mythology, that you are marked with the sign of the gods. Of course, some of those of you who are monotheistic will say, why are you talking of the gods? But you are anointed, if I'm going to use the more evangelical notion. But I prefer to use the other word, that you are marked with the sign of the gods. So you carry a burden. You carry a burden, an intellectual, political, and ideological burden of explaining us, interpreting us, and also being able to engage with the terrains and arena of a knowledge society and knowledge economy. So in that sense, I thought, and one of the things I was saying about the fact of your explanations and interpretation is that the social sciences provide something that is different, because what they do is that they are the products of evidence tested and validated through the rigors of established scientific processes and methods, often subject to the critical review of peers, colleagues, and knowledge systems that cut across national, ethnic, and racial boundaries. In a way, we actually are part of the engagement of the universe, from where the notion of the university comes from. So in that sense, the social science, for whatever it is, and you're going to see, I'm going to move into something very interesting here, because I'm going to engage quality. And I have my own, you know, my colleague and good friend and brother, Bayo Olukoshi, gave a keynote lecture here and said, African universities must nuance quality. For me, there's no nuancing of quality. There's no need to nuance quality. So I'm going to talk about that later on in terms of who you are, because I believe quality is universal. Excellence is universal. There is a multiplicity of talent, and you can have the discipline and the rigors to actually sharpen and tighten that talent and that training to the extent that you have to be internationally competitive. So quality is the same in Madras as it is in Lagos, as it is in New York, as it is in Nairobi, as it is in Accra, or anywhere else in the world. So that is why I think you're very important. And I have therefore intentionally, I have decided to title this conversation as Reclaiming Excellence, Rebuilding Communities, Transforming Systems. Critical Imperatives for African Higher Education Today. Reclaiming Excellence, Rebuilding Communities, Transforming Systems. Critical Imperatives for African Higher Education Today. I have intentionally chosen this theme in order to challenge us as academics, researchers, administrators, and in some cases, funders, like my ex-colleague. I'm no longer wearing that hat. Now I'm fundraising like mad. Now that's what I was telling Ron. I said, you know, when I hear there's a funder somewhere, I'm there, you know. So, you know, and also for funders concerned with and committed to the social sciences in Africa. This intentionally chosen topic is in order to confront us with our intellectual and human condition in today's rapidly transforming and often unpredictable world. I also want to use the opportunity to challenge some of the dominant conventional narratives. What Achille Mbembe, even though I do not agree with him, you know that in many ways, I have always disagreed with him robustly, called African modes of self-writing. I do not agree with him because that those modes of self-writing and the conclusions he drew from that work was slightly different from the conclusion I want to draw about our place, our roles, and responsibilities in our research, teaching, short-term training, and writing today. And I want to proceed along three key points. In terms of talking about reclaiming excellence, rebuilding communities, and transforming systems, I want to proceed around three points. The first one is a point that the time has come on the continent to exit the crisis mode. You know, even the organization I'm working in now was set up as a result of the Blair Commission's thing, crisis in African higher education, crisis in Africa. I think we have gone beyond the crisis mode. We're going beyond the recovery mode in some ways, you know, from crisis to recovery. Some of the titles of some of the works that have been done. We actually should not be looking under, and I had that in the conversations I had with my board not too long ago. I said, you know, at times you are set up with what I call a remediation logic. And the remediation logic is that, yes, build capacity, help, add this, that. I said, we need to move from a remediation logic to an excellence logic. That we are creating excellent actors and players, and we are imposing standards of excellence that are international and transnational. And therefore, we have no space for excuses. Of course, we have electricity problems, we have water problems, we are poorly paid in our universities, we are this, we are that. But people are competing. You know, my people, the Yorubas, say out of the black pot comes the white porridge. You know, in that sense that, you know, whatever you think. So from this continent, we are having people going out there, topping, excelling, and all of that. So we have moved out of the crisis mode. And it is the crisis narrative has been imposed on Africa and has been our own mode of self-writing and what I say self-talking for almost three decades now. And it's about time that we actually exit the crisis mode. And many things have happened. The whole conversation about African rising, Luckily, we have moved away from Afro-pessimism, but Afro-pessimism should not exactly lead us to Afro-euphoria, as Tandikan Kandawiri mentioned in his lectures in the University of Ghana. I don't know whether there's anybody from the University of Ghana here. Yes, what do you call that strange colonial lecture of yours? When Tandika, yes. something gives
that?
I was there. You remember when Tandika got his honorary doctorate? I collected Vatan's doctorate for him that day. So, Tandika, you remember that famous lecture in which he said we should move away from Afro-euphoria, because everybody's talking about Africa rising. Who is Africa rising for in the first place? And if you look at if you have a sense of the long durée, between 1950s and 1964, the growth rate in Africa was much higher than all the so-called self-congratulatory mode of Africa rising. But the key thing here is that we have gotten too used to the crisis narrative. And the crisis narrative had handicapped us, because in many ways, so as the next generation of social scientists, whatever happens on this continent, I think we need to move out of the crisis mode. Our universities are recovering. You are in one wonderful setting. You know, there's another one like that in Accra called Aseshi. There's another one in Nairobi here called Strathmore. There are what I call pools of excellence. I don't even want to say pockets of excellence anymore. There are pools of excellence, and they should be the norm in terms of our striving. So we have moved out of the crisis mode. That experience led to a lot of conversation around what we should be doing with our higher education, and what our higher education was about. But this program itself had a combination. It was addressing the process of the transition from the crisis mode in terms of the nature of the social science endeavor and effort on this continent. But the important thing about it is that it is not stuck in the crisis mode. It has within it the motion towards the excellence mode. And that is something that I really want to continue to emphasize. Our next generation of social scientists must be able to compete anywhere. And I can talk about that because I have seen lots of our own people who have been able to compete. And we hope that as you go through the process, your doctoral, your postdoc, you see yourself both in terms of engagement, both with your local and the global. Not only engagement from the perspective of being in Makerere University. Makerere is actually topping, is right on top there now in the latest. Yes, it's number three after, or number two after UCT. Number four?
Number three.
Number three. It's number three. I saw it here. Times High, yeah. There's one came out yesterday or 2 days ago. So it's not just about Makerere in that contest and the relationship between town and gown. Actually, a lot of our universities have moved from the relationship between town and gown. They have not only, you don't only have the town and the gown, the slums are coming onto the campuses. You know, the shanties and the slums and the culture they carry, you know. But the relationship between that, but the fact that you are plucked internationally, you publish in international journals, high impact journals, you attend international conferences, you engage with your peers, and I'm going to talk about that when we talk about community. Your peers is not just this, I don't want to use the word cohort, because it reminds me of the South African writer, Barbarians at the Gate. You know, when you think of cohorts, you think of something Germanic in the whole history of the German history, you know, of hundreds of thousands of, you know, people with spears and arrows and bone spears in leather, you know, leather outfits breaking down the frontiers and the doors of the great city there. No, they call you, do you call them cohorts? That's my own impression whenever I hear the word cohort. So you should go back, Google, you know, look at the history of the notion of cohorts. It comes from the Attila the Hun, and the Huns who were attacking, you know, the gates of the Roman civilization.
So, as long as they don't turn on you, watch the stage, you're okay.
So, but interestingly, I think as a Dhaka summit on the future of African higher education held in March 2015 pointed out very clearly, African higher education and Africa seriously, and we need to, that's another point will come, we need to make our leaders, we need to hold their feet to the fire. We have exited the crisis mode. We are moving to a different mode. So it is time in Africa to once engage, own, and advance our knowledge production. And this cannot be done without claiming our much-needed excellence and relevance in the social sciences. This is where programs such as yours are contributing to a new vanguard of African expertise and talent that will accompany, guide, and lead us into the brave new world, new knowledge society and economy that we all desire for this continent. By demanding that we exit the crisis narrative and pointing us to the perhaps more demanding task of rebuilding, reclaiming, and renewing what I believe our societies and what I believe a program like yours embodies. So what is to be done in the social sciences in Africa today? From my point of view, the different elements of the title of this address embody and point at some important foundational efforts that we need to put in. Let us quickly examine each one of them. I start with reclaiming excellence. Excellence is a very contentious notion in scholarship as it relates to academic production and teaching in Africa today. It is a notion that we have politicized, partly because we often believe that there is no absolute excellence, and also because of the politics of the global production of knowledge. Indeed, both points have merit. But universities and the academy exist in universes and traditions of knowledge production. They also exist in the worlds of certain conventional definitions of what constitute rigor and standard. We might claim that these are defined and created by certain dominant groups, of which the Social Science Research Council is. If you look at it in the politics of international global knowledge production or the political economy, the Social Science Research Council in the very heart, you know, of the dominant. Some words are no longer permissible in this post-neoliberal world. You know, there are how many? I think whenever I talk, you know, there's something now that we are having a conversation around with Bayo and Co. We are actually thinking of working on the notion of the neoliberal subject. And the neoliberal subject, we think, are all those who came onto the scene in Africa after 1974. Some of us are the post-colonial subjects or the colonial subjects. The neoliberal subjects are the children of structural adjustment and the children of market fundamentalism. So you were brought up in a situation where you never actually knew what it was like to have a good university. You never actually knew what it was like to have a situation of individual and collective self-confidence that says, yes, we can. Those were the things that came out with the nationalist era, that we can face the world, we can tackle the world, we can conquer the world. Of course, the first attack on Africans, and I realized that the first shock at that time was the fact that your currency no longer matched. The second shock was that your state never provided scholarships. Your state did not invest in higher education, did not invest in, you know, the deregulation that occurred with the structural adjustment program that started with the oil shock of 1973. Ghana was the first to be hit in the devaluation of the cedi. Then it moved down to Benin and Nigeria. Then Zambia, Kenya and Co. came after. Then you have it. And it's also very closely related to two important political events in the world: the election of Ronald Reagan and the election of Margaret Thatcher. So the Anglo-Saxon neoliberal program was then further carried forward by the IFIs, the International Financial Institutions, the World Bank, the IFC, and the IMF. And that was the era of the conditionalities. Now, that led, there are many things about that. The state was itself sluggish. The state, you had authoritarian rule. There was a need for different forms of liberalization. But the neoliberal endeavor, which has occurred now for 30 years, and the World Bank and the IMF is now apologizing for the neoliberal, but they can only apologize and say, oh yes, we got it all wrong, we got the theories wrong, because Greece, Iceland, and the state of California have been hit. For those of you Americans, the current vice chancellor here, Paul Zaleza, used to be at the Loyola Marymount, and I went to give a talk there. And when I went in there, that was when California was in the heart of this thing. So I said, you Californians, now you understand what it means when we were screaming in Africa about the fact that the state is going bankrupt and so on. But there's a particular, I look at it, there's a particular kind of narrative and engagement with reality defined by this whole fetishization of entrepreneurialism, fetishization of the market, fetishization of doing, multiple trades and all of that. And also the fetishization of this ICT kind of, which is all correct. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not against technology. But there's a whole structuring of the mentality. And psychologists, sociologists, we have to see what has happened to the kind of young person that was produced over this period of three and a half decades. And we are actually going to see if we can get somebody to give us some money to you. This wonderful, wonderful theoretical and empirical work around what kind of African has been produced as a result of 3 to 4 decades of neoliberalization. It's a social science question. What is the psychology? What is the kind of orientation? Is there in which the narrative now is about entrepreneurship, not citizenship? And if you go back to Schumpeter, and you go back to the entrepreneur, he's an adventurer. He's a frontier personality. The breaking down values and reconfiguration of values means heads are going to be bloodied. But citizenship, the whole notion of citizenship, and Obama is one of those Obama is actually an archetypal neoliberal advocate, but tied into a social democratic program because, coming from Chicago. So this kind of things are very interesting for us. But we need to reclaim excellence. And we might claim that these are defined and created by certain dominant groups like the people we are talking about, institutions and tendency. But as the world is presently constituted, we, all of us here, most of us, have bought into the definitions and parameters imposed by the guilds, the conventions, the practices and standards that define our broad disciplines. And don't forget, we are actually one of the few institutions that have changed significantly, universities. We still have deans, we have provosts, and we are organized like guilds. Your PhD process is an apprenticeship system. I am the supervisor, I am the master. With my group of masters, there are a couple of other journeymen, like the lecturers around. And of course, you are the apprentices. It's a guild system, So we still operate like guilds. A sociologist, I keep saying I'm from the tribe of sociologists. A sociologist takes his definitions of the language, of the practices, the tools, the mentality, the process of development from his community and guild of sociologists. So a person, Louise Mully, in 2003, wrote a very interesting book on quality and power in higher education. She critiqued this whole issue of quality. But in spite of the fact that there is the power relations in quality, it really does not stop the fact that quality is important. And one of the things that I want to say to those of us African scholars, please never accept that people will tell you quality is relative. There's the politics of quality. But there is quality that if you impose your talent, will finally come out. And I have never had the debate from African, my senior colleagues, the African debate has never been, in the African social science terrain, has never been about the protocols, it has never been about the standards. It is often about content, whether there's enough local content. It is often about relevance and about the nature of epistemologies, the question of indigenization, and the access to publishing and dissemination. It's never been about quality as an abstract category, that they have their excellence, we have our excellence. No, that has never been. I've not heard it from Issa Shivji, I've not heard it from Achi Mafeje, I've not heard it from Paul Zeleza, I've not heard it from Bayo Lukoshi, I've not heard it, and I have never in any situation, and Andrea knows, when we had debates at the Carnegie Corporation, I've always said, look, quality is quality. You're actually ghettoizing. And when you talk, you're putting Africans in a social science ghetto. When you say, Africans, okay, you're okay, this is your own quality, and this is our quality, we understand. No, we want the same quality. And we will work for it. We will strive for it. And we will demand of ourselves that same quality and excellence. I don't want to be recognized as an African scholar. I am an African scholar because I am an African. But I want to be recognized as a scholar. Stop. The African is about relevance. It's not about excellence. You get my point? The African is about relevance. It's not about excellence. So as the next generation, please don't let anybody seduce you and make you think, oh, yes, Colombia, yeah, yes. Even if you are coming from Ikpetumadu University, sorry. And there's a chief of Ikpetumadu here. I said that intentionally. My colleague is called Madame Nigeria, where we were working together at Carnegie, because she is one of those who really embraced and loved this continent. And she got the chieftaincy title in Ikpetumadu. You know that, Prof. Yes, she got the chieftaincy title, the community she worked in the health program. So even if you are coming from, I'm not talking of Obafemi Awolowo, I'm even talking of Ikpetumadu State University or Ikpetumadu District University. Even if you are coming from there, your quality should be the same as Columbia, as Harvard, as Oxford, as Cambridge, as anywhere. Chefini, it's like that. So we do, and we don't, and the procedures and protocols for that, we must adhere to those rigors. We can talk about erasure. We can talk about invisibilization. We can talk about the imposition of other definitions and interpretations of our conditions and existence. And we can talk about the numerical and other domination of intellectual spaces by non-Africans. But we cannot talk about excellence as excellence in the process, the protocol, the rigor, the currency, the discipline. That we cannot compromise. But so that is one of the important points that I think we should take note of here. Quality and excellence are not the issue. In fact, we continue to be concerned about quality and excellence in our disciplines on the continent. We demand rigor, we demand currency, we demand the meeting of appropriate standards, rules, and norms in research methods, protocols, and practices, and we do not tolerate or accept plagiarism, fraud, and other breaches of the rules and values of acknowledged intellectual production, reproduction, and dissemination. So how do we reclaim excellence? Your program is one of that, by setting the standards, meeting the barriers. Many of our other institutions on the continent are doing that. And you see that by providing the institutional context and resources for building skills and techniques, transferring skills and knowledge, enhancing peer review and evaluation of practices, methods, content, teaching and pedagogy, and writing and publishing. We are also demanding, that's also another important point, this thing is not a joke. Writing is not easy. Excellent production is not easy. We are demanding the industry that comes from consistent and repeated application. We are demanding the creativity and innovation that leads us to new forms of knowledge, technologies, and practices, and the relevance that grounds the whole scholarship enterprises. So CODESRIA, EERC, of course, PASGA, we are the youngest baby in the field. All of us are demanding it, and this is exactly what your own situation is. A lot of African universities are also growing up to do this, but we also need partnerships. We need collaborations. We need engagement. with the world. And what do these people bring to us? Not only just institutions, but even our diaspora out there. And Professor Zeleza is actually leading the Carnegie African Diaspora Program that tried to bring people. The partners and the people we work with, like the SSRC, are there to reinforce, to complement, to contribute to renewal and advancement of the efforts that we already have on the continent. They bring and offer valuable skills, knowledge, techniques, intellectual and academic currency. And because they come from other societies and where they are located, they constitute bridgeheads into the universal but often unequal world of global knowledge production and reproduction. So we're holding hands. We're together with the SSRCs, the diaspora programs, the various other programs, because we have a relationship. And the academic production process is in itself universal. But they constitute also not just partners, but also they come with a lot of baggages. They come with their own baggage, and I need to point that out because I'm in front of them too. You see, when I was in Carnegie, I had to be diplomatic. But now, but now I'm no longer, every word that I say has no relationship to funding. So now I can say something completely different. You know, our partners come with their own baggage, institutional and intellectual arrogance, a possible sense of disconnectedness, and impatience with institutional and infrastructural sluggishness and inadequacies and other cultural issues and attitudes that demand interrogation, unpacking, and engagement. We are not the only one who should be. It's like a proper relationship. One party should not be the only one doing all the struggles. So we are not the only one who should be examining ourselves to say, what do we need? What are we doing? And I also believe that engagement, and I believe in a symmetrical engagement, not asymmetrical engagement, a co-equality of partnership, because the engagement can be a win-win for both parties. They learn from, and in the CAPREX program, I have never heard it stated more exactly than the University of Cambridge, a Carnegie program for excellence. The Makerere people know that program. That program, we're talking about the health sciences and medicine, and the reason for an engagement with the world around that, and the reason for actually inserting, partnering, and bringing in others, and the knowledge, the flows of knowledge. You know, just like disease has no boundaries, knowledge has no boundaries. So they are transnational, they are transboundary, and so that flow is what is important. And we can only advance that flow if we consider each other as partners, SSRC, as co-equal partners, and I know you do, but I just thought, as I speak to our next generation social scientists, they must always have at the back of their heads the fact that if they maintain excellence, if they are rigorous, and if they do the work the way they should do, not cutting any quarters, then you have a right to demand co-equality, even with places that have more resources than yours. To say, look, we're not going to be glorified research assistants. You don't bring a complete research proposal and program to us and say, come and help me. I want you to work with me. So you Africans or you Kenyans, now let's go. Help us with collecting the data. We'll do the analysis. And no. We formulate the questions together. We formulate the problem together. And we engage the problem together. And if the problem is located here, and anyway, the days of the third, second, and fourth world are gone with globalization, because you have the same, you have insertion even in the advanced economies and societies of the same kinds of problems you have here, and that be in climate change, in poverty, in criminality, in terrorism. We have criminal gangs here. Where the things we call militia, Mungiki, are the same what they call the West Side Boys and, Yeah? East Coast, West Coast, Chicago, with the guns. It's the same thing as Mungiki. Yes, you just have to frame it. Yes, they call them gangs. We call them, in Nigeria, we call them cults. But they are the same kind of, it's the same kind of relationship. The only difference in time, I don't even know, maybe the Americans will correct me, the historians among you, whether they actually linked. I know the mafia is linked to politics, but whether the new gangs are linked to politics, because in some of our own countries, we are using those gangs for politics, and therefore, in your whole field of peace, security, and development, they constitute a problem, because we are beginning to see new kinds. And then there's franchising going on now in the field. You know, Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda, Maghreb. There's a new thing going on. There's a struggle now within our own Boko Haram and things like that. But they're also franchising with militias, local militias and local gangs. And so all these problems exist across the board. The second one that I think is very important is rebuilding communities. And I'm saying that because this is an individual fellowship, you constitute a cohort. But we... Tom is laughing when I say you constitute... I can't even... You know, don't worry. This is a cohort to break down the gates, walls, and barriers of theocracy, authoritarianism, and the absence of peace. So I don't mind your kind of cohort if your weapons and everything is aimed at all of those things that are wrong with us. But you constitute a cohort. But, you know, there was a time there were intellectual communities on this continent. I am one of the privileged people. I was very young then. The Ibadan School of History. The Dar es Salaam School of History. The Dar es Salaam Social Sciences Community. Ibadan School of Theater Arts, Legon Philosophy. There were times on this continent when people were plugged into. And the whole period of the neoliberal era, outside of South Africa, in terms of the strength of the university, damaged a bit of that. We are beginning to reconstitute that. And you guys are even luckier now. You have this thing, information communication technology. You can create virtual communities. You have, you know, enhanced mechanisms, WhatsApp, Facebook, but also it's always a blended issue because the communities have to be not only virtual, but they also have to be physical. So we must have hubs, intellectual hubs. We must recreate intellectual hubs on this continent. And it does not matter. Somebody was asking me, South Africa. I said, no, South Africa, we contribute, at least as a Nigerian, I was taxed during the apartheid struggles. So we contributed to the liberation of South Africa. All the Makerekeres, or what do you call us? Makwerekweres, is that the correct word? Anybody from South Africa here? Yes, that is why your social science armory should be directed at some of the things that we're dealing with. Not only in South Africa, and also xenophobia, conflict, all of those, lack of inclusivity, all of the, I am not, because I'm in a place that does social sciences for public policy, I am not a neutral social scientist. I am a social scientist for the purpose of addressing specific problems and injustices. That's my own. You can be a neutral social scientist, a neutral economist on the one hand, on the other hand, and on many hands or whatever. That's okay. But then when government calls us, the important thing is to be transparent. This is my value. This is my position. These are the different scenarios. This is the optimal solution. This is the solution I prefer politically, but this is the solution that we can see given your resources and so on and so forth. So for me, again, I think those are some of the training we're going through. And the next generation of social scientists, you all are going to be doing that for this continent and for our different countries. But we need to rebuild communities. There were these schools in Africa a long time ago. You had in Vicks, you had schools like that. You had even Fort Hare and many of them. They were not only physical schools located in specific places, they were intellectual and disciplinary schools of thought and practice. These were academic, intellectual, and epistemic communities that were once vibrant, active, and attracted scholars and students from all over the world. They were cosmopolitan terrains, sponsored and funded by governments and private foundations, with self-conscious projects of contributing to knowledge, development, and policies in Africa. I challenge you to begin to think of that. You're lucky there must have been about six, how many groups now?
This is the fifth.
Fifth groups. You are constituting a veritable community. There are two ways. The SSRC can help to organize alumni, whatever. But it's not the SSRC. You need each other more than the SSRC. You need to start amongst yourselves to know who is where, to know what different problems, intellectual problems you are engaging, and to engage with each other, particularly this day and age that has actually been made simpler, to alert each other about conferences, to invite each other to conferences, to do collective bids for projects, and to take advantage of the fact you don't need anybody. Some of you are more entrepreneurial. I hate that word, but it's okay. More active. More active than that. You are more, you know, proactive. You can organize each other. But you can also determine that you constitute a group together. And you have your intellectual mentors and leaders. Rope them into it. Start conversations among each other. I am looking. There's one. I just come out. I was telling Andrea. PASGA is just instituting a 5-year program on empowerment and accountability in social and political action. And it's a 5 or 6 country: Myanmar, Pakistan, Nigeria, Mozambique, Egypt. And I've just come out of just going through Nigeria and looking at that. And Femi Balogun, who is behind you, I took him as my general donkey man. We suffered together, Femi, yeah. You know, donkeys, I'm just using that in a very, very tame way, because I look at donkey. Those of you who come from Lamu, those are the most ill-treated beast of burden in the world. And I have such great sympathy for donkeys. If I, you know, everywhere in the world, they are beating, they are pushed. So that's how I felt when we were going through this. We were living in 3-star hotels, drinking water that could give us typhoid. But we came back in one piece, you know. But the important point about this is some of these things I was talking about. The role of local militia in six and vigilante groups, the so-called sungu-sungu, in, you know, social and political action. Their linkages with political parties and political actors. And the whole way they are becoming internationalized. The whole of the Sahel area is beginning to have the same kinds of groups, which you will find they might be ethnically segmented, but across. Those are the kinds you should begin to have discussions amongst yourselves around your issues. Nobody's going to build a community for you. Nobody built a community for the Adia Jais and co. Nobody built a community for the people who started the Dar es Salaam School. When the community was vibrant in one faculty, other people came from the UK, they came from Australia, they came from everywhere. We need to reclaim. Some of our intellectual hubs are already focused on doing this. I know University of Ghana, Legon is interested. I know VITS is interested. I know UCT is interested. I know quite a few are interested in certain areas. In infectious diseases, for instance, you have those communities. But I want to challenge you. Don't go back as isolated, fragmented, individualized, individualistic scholars. Is there any other word we can use? Segmentation? Segmented? Separated? Whatever words you want to use, you know. But please don't go back and say this is the end. This is not the end. Even if it's just 5 or 6 of you, I would really love it if I hear later from the Social Science Research Council that you have a vibrant, even if it's a virtual, but then you share opportunities with each other. You know, there's a conference going on. Codesria is looking for this. Apply. PASGA is looking for this. Let us put this peace, security, and development slant, even if they don't have it. We can always hook it on to it. You know, your areas of interest. So, please, we have to rebuild communities. The funders have tried. They cannot do it for us. We have to do it ourselves. The universities cannot. Some of the leadership in the university, and that's interesting, because you guys are going to become leaders anyway. If you're in think tanks, you're in universities, you get your PhD, you get whatever, you become deans, you become directors, you become heads of department, whatever, You can even be intellectual leaders without holding any administrative position. So you have to. We have to rebuild communities. And we have to reclaim the kind of intellectual vibrancy in those communities through debates. So our task is to rebuild them through linkages, partnerships, collaborations, and cooperation in research, in teaching, in short-term training, publishing, and innovation. And of course, we have the added advantage of the network society, you know, according to Manuel Castells. I'm sure some of you read the trilogy of Emmanuel Castells. Again, this is where international partners, collaborations, and linkages can play a significant set of roles and provide opportunity in actively cooperating and collaborating with us. Collaborating with us in agenda setting, in knowledge and skills building, in enhancing just and equitable cosmopolitanization and globalization of knowledge. I love the notion of the cosmopolitan. And Kwame Appiah, in Cosmopolitanism, that book of his, is a challenge to the, you know, a lot of us now today, we're just segmented, narrow-minded, little beings, little spirits, because we're caught up in our ethnic cocoon. We're caught up in our religious cocoon. And our religious cocoon is not even, there is no bridges across Christianity. The Pentecostals and the Evangelicals are different from the denominations. The Catholics are different from the Lutherans. And we are caught up in little cocoons. And the problems of the world are created within those silos. We need to transcend those cocoons. And so that's why the scholar as a cosmopolitan is important. You read what is going on in China, Chinese modernization, the growth of higher education in China. You read what's going on in the Caribbean. You read what is going on in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Nigeria, Benin Republic, everywhere, Mauritius. You cannot just be a specialist on Kenya or a specialist on Nigeria. You have to be a cosmopolitan intellectual, because that's the way you can link with each other. So I insisted on that word, particularly in an era of the globalization of knowledge. Then, why are we doing all of this? Knowledge for what? Why are you spending all your life trying to do your PhD and all of that? If you wanted money, you could have left in high school and be making brick blocks. You have more money. Yes, really. I keep saying, when I used to be in the classroom, and Femi hears me 3/4 of the time, if you want to be a rich man, Bill Gates and Co. have shown us. You don't have to waste all your life. Can you imagine how long 7 years of primary school, 6 years of high school, 4 years of first degree, 2 years of master's, 4 years of PhD? You should have gotten out at high school. Yes, you'll be very rich. By the time they will be coming to you to, because we are now saying there's no the money is not tainted except it ain't enough. It's not, it's not that. That's Bill, the Barry Gibberman. There's no tainted money except that it ain't enough. And we need the money of the African philanthropies, the African businessmen. So we will have been coming to you, by that time you will have been selling bricks and gari or whatever. Or you'll have made your first initial capital from smuggling textile or smuggling Bollywood videos. Then you'll have laundered the money. Then you'll have laundered the money and now you are part of a bank. So we'll come to you. You know, we need some money for our social science laboratory or something. But that's okay. But you shouldn't be here if that's what you wanted. Honestly, unless you're like David Simon in mathematics, who won the gold medal in mathematics and then designed an algorithm for the Wall Street. And now he's putting a lot of money back into mathematics. Many of us are not going to be of that. You're not going to be that wealthy. I have never, you know, I look at these people, 4x4, Pajero, Mercedes, and all of that. I decided to reject it. Because then they'll be distracting me. So I want a BMW 7 Series. Why? They're comfortable cars occasionally. You know, you don't feel the bump. But I didn't do my PhD to have a Ferrari. So, and this is a vocation. Max Weber talked about it. science as a vocation. And when he was talking about science as a vocation, he was talking about the whole intellectual endeavor. It's almost like a priestly vocation. You don't have to take the vow of poverty or celibacy. I don't see any celibates around here. You're a celibate. You don't have to take the vows of poverty and celibacy, but you are never going to be, like they say in Nigeria, you are never going to be poor again in your life. Unless you get it wrong. If you have a good PhD, you're doing what you need to do, you're doing your work, you are never going to be $2 a day. You know? You're going to be more than that. So, it's important to recognize that we're doing this for one thing. Either out of curiosity, yes, you want to know knowledge, you know, or change society, or change the conditions of living of other people. So that is the whole point of knowledge for what? Basically. So I think for those of us in social sciences, I keep saying knowledge is neither neutral nor innocent. Knowledge is implicated in the production and reproduction of civilizations and the social construction of realities. Knowledge, particularly in the social sciences, constitutes the basis of ideas and resources by which societies are reproduced and renewed. All of these processes and structures are not perfect, and they are contested by different vested interests that will impose their own definitions and meanings on others. This is the source of the structural inequality, inequity, domination, and exploitation that we face today. But they also help to build systems in which we live and in which we seek to transform and improve our individual and collective well-being and human condition. This is where our notions of development, our notions of progress, our notion of human well-being come from. Our social sciences need to expand our frontiers of knowledge, deepen our scope of accomplishments, but also contribute to the greater social project of transforming our organizations, institutions, economies, polities, and culture. They should offer us the realization of the infinite potential of our humanity to build a better world. This is what our theories, concepts, methodologies, measurements, evaluations, partnerships, and collaborations should be about another possible world that realizes our fullest human potential, a world that enhances justice, prosperity, sustainability, equality, and equity for all. Thank you.